API SP test limits.
What's wrong?
My travel rewards card didn't earn enough miles for my vacation.
Are you crying? Are you crying because of that other credit card?
Uh-huh.
Well, switch to the Capital One Venture card. Venture lets you redeem miles on any travel purchase.
Really?
Yep, and you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every single day. The Capital One Venture card. What's in your wallet?
Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com for details.
This is the story of the one. As a facility technician installing a new welding station, he knows getting the ventilation right is critical for safety. That's why when questions arise, there's Grainger. Grainger offers detailed technical product information online at his fingertips, so it's easy to find what he needs. Because when it comes to safety, having answers means he and his people can breathe a little easier. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Do you know what brand sells the most work shoes in America? Skechers. Why? Skechers has the best-looking safety-toe and slip-resistant shoes around. They've got superior quality and simply incredible prices, but many people get them just for the style. So you can enjoy tough, steel-toed protection and slip-resistant soles anywhere, even if you don't need them for work. And since they're Skechers, you know they're going to be comfortable with Skechers' exclusive air-cooled memory foam. Find your new pair of Skechers safety-toe and slip-resistant work shoes at a Skechers store, at Skechers.com, or wherever work shoes are sold.
Tonight's forecast, maybe some thunderstorms and a low around 70.
Weather brought to you by Express Employment Professionals. Hire for logistics roles with Express Employment Professionals. They'll take care of recruiting, interviewing, and more, then supply you with the workforce you need. Visit expresspros.com for a location.
This hour is brought to you by Cars for Kids.
Broadcasting live from the Hyundai Studios, presented by your local Hyundai dealers. This is Chicago's number one and most listened to sports station. 670 The Score is Chicago Sports. Chicago Sports is The Score. Always live on the free Odyssey app. WSCR Chicago. WBMX HD2 Chicago. And Odyssey Sports Station.
The Score!
We're back Dan with Bernstein host Chris Ronji on The Score.
Pitch is hit high in the air, deep left center field. You can forget about it. Ian Happ goes yard. About halfway up the bleachers. And the Cubs extend the lead. 5-2 over the Blue Jays here in the seventh. For Happ, that's home run number 21.
At Wrigley Field this afternoon, the Cubs get a win after taking a lead into the ninth inning. They let that get away, but bottom of the 10th, hey, they walk it off. So no harm done, right? A win for the Cubs, their 60th on the season. They find themselves three games under 500 as they try to make up ground in the National League wild card race. It is time to go back to the phone line as we visit with one of my favorite people on the Score Hotline, presented by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We are talking to the Chicago Tribune's Megan Montemuro, who covers the Cubs for the Trib. What's going on, Megan?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
Oh, man, I'm feeling pretty good today. Getting to talk a lot of Bears, and we get to talk about the Cubs, who are, let's start with the ninth inning. And we know how that all played out. Hector Neris had quite a bit of difficulty. I kind of started the show crabbing about the umpire calling the balk Alan Porter at third base. And It would have been a strikeout. It would have given them the second out. They probably wouldn't have lost the lead. In the end, no harm done. But what were you thinking up in the press box when that moment happened?
I was watching it on my phone. It's been something that Neris has had to be aware of all season. Spot previously this year. It's something that he's talked about as having to be mindful of when he tries to push the limits of that. And it's something the Cubs have talked to him about. He obviously is a pitcher that umps are paying close attention to, given just how he operates on the mound and obviously being called for it, in big spots that have led to run scoring. So, yeah, I mean, obviously that's a spot like you have to really make sure you're coming to a complete, set because, you know, they're clearly paying very close attention to him. And it's been an emphasis coming into the season as well.
Yeah, I get it. It's just one of those things that I know doesn't matter in the end, but umpires are so inconsistent with balk calls. And so a lot of times they do it. I do not give them the benefit of the doubt. And that's kind of what happened today. Do I still have Megan? Did we lose Megan?
We might have lost Megan. Let me double check.
We might have lost Megan. Oh, man. I think maybe she feels like she doesn't want to. She doesn't want to hear me insult the umpires. I think that's what it is. Some people are very defensive of umpires. I don't think Megan is, though. I don't think that's really the issue. I've got a guy that I work with, close-ish with, at my other job. And he does not like it when you criticize umpires. And you would be surprised at the amount of people who will reach out to me, whether it's on Twitter or on the text line on the other show that I do. And they hate it when I criticize umpires because they want to remind me that it is a very difficult job. Hey, I know. I get it. I umpired Little League Baseball, which is just as difficult as umpiring professional baseball. I'm certain of it. But yes, in this case, it didn't really matter. I know I'm beating a dead horse. I don't care. I just like to crab about the umpires. Is that okay? So Megan Montemurro is back with us. The cell phone monster got her, but we have got her back now. So look, they're 3 games under 500 right now. We know the standings are not in their favor at the moment, but we've been following along the National League wildcard race all season long, and they're still in striking distance. They're 5 games out. There are 4 teams between them and that final wild card spot, with the 6th team being the Braves, who hold that spot. Even though after they operated the way they did at the deadline, as you look at where they are, how does the organization, how does the clubhouse feel about their chances of making any sort of run here and getting themselves in playoff position?
Yeah, I mean, I certainly can sense a feeling, and even guys have talked about it, that if this is when they're going to make a move, now's the time to do it. You know, they don't play a team over 500 until Labor Day weekend when the Yankees come to town. And Jameson Taillon, you know, acknowledged, like, you know, these are all MLB teams, but you have to take advantage and beat the teams you should beat if you're going to be a playoff team. And so if they're going to put together a hot streak, you know, now's the time to do it. They're going to have their chances to potentially make up ground. Obviously, this homestand, you have the Blue Jays and Tigers go on. And then when you lead up to that series against the Yankees, they're playing the Pirates twice, the Marlins, and the Nationals. So, you know, now's the time if they're going to find a way to get back in it. You know, they have to do it in this next two and a half week stretch. And it's doubly important because when you look at the wild card standings, I mean, the teams that are currently in front of them, the Braves in that last spot, and then Mets, Giants, Reds, and Cardinals, all those teams hold the season tiebreaker over the Cubs. So even though they're in theory or technically 5 games back, you have to add one onto that in the sense that if they finish tied with any of those teams, that they'll lose the tiebreaker. And so that definitely will add to the challenge. I mean, they saw last year, you know, how tough it can be when you don't own important tiebreakers like that. So, yeah, they really have to find a way and really tap into the offensive consistency that has been better as of late, but certainly hasn't been to the level that they were able to count on back in April.
I know I'm jumping ahead a little bit here, but it's making me think of it just because of what they did at the deadline, and it almost seemed not like they were selling off, but they certainly weren't buying at the deadline. I guess maybe you can argue that Paredes is a bit of a buy, but also kind of a future buy. On The Score yesterday, Jed Hoyer was talking about the competitive balance tax, and that's essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, that's not necessarily an issue for them as they are to go into an off season. As I said, this is jumping ahead quite a bit, But if they're willing to spend over a CBT, how aggressive do you think they will get during the offseason? And do you think it will have anything to do with how they finish here?
I mean, I think it's kind of twofold. I mean, I do think they have to pay attention and figure out if they can't get going, like why the offense looks good for 1 month and then couldn't replicate that or even really build off what they showed last year. And Jed Hoyer, you know, recently basically said as much, that he needs to see more from the offense. Otherwise, you know, they're going to have to consider making some type of changes, and they're going to have some tough decisions to make on that front. And then in terms of the CBT, yeah, I mean, they've always said, and I know, you know, anytime a front office or, you know, people in power say, oh, this is going to happen down the line, you have to wait and see if it actually is going to come to fruition. But they've long said that, you know, when the organization is at the point where the big league team is ready to be competitive again and pass that, you know, brief rebuilding phase, that they would spend. And so they've definitely obviously pushed up to, and now as Jed Hoyer said on the show, that, you know, they exceeded it. You know, they're willing to do that for the right players. They're not going to do it just to obviously spend money. And if you're going to go over it, I mean, you really should be going over it to its full capabilities, because, you know, you have that range of millions until you hit the second threshold. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how they navigate that. And obviously some of that's going to depend if, you know, Cody Bellinger opts out of his deal, what happens with Hector Neris and his potentially vesting option based on appearances and games finished. So they definitely are going to have to make some tough decisions if this team falls short again, because on paper, I mean, they should not be at this point again and this deep in the season.
Megan Montemurro covers the Cubs for the Chicago Tribune with us on 670 The Score. So with Neris closing out the game today, I'm assuming, though I could be wrong, he won't be available for tomorrow's game because of the amount of pitches he threw today, if there is a save situation. But in terms of closing games out, how much more will he factor in that as we go through the remainder of the season? Is that just going to be their guy? What do you think will happen?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of, I know obviously fans are frustrated with how today played out, but generally speaking, I mean, it kind of tracks with how he's pitched for extended stretches at this point of the season, where, you know, in most cases he'll get into trouble and he's able to navigate himself out of it. You know, memorably, obviously recently the game, you know, against the White Sox on the South side, had a very tense situation there. So he does have this ability to work himself out of trouble more often or not. And obviously the you know, late game situations are complicated with, you know, no Advert Alzola. I mean, that was a very important arm coming into the season, and now his season's over because of Tommy John surgery. And so Craig Counsell and, you know, Tommy Hotovy are having to navigate their late inning options, where, you know, you don't, now with Mark Leiter Jr. gone, you don't have a ton of guys that necessarily have a lot of experience. I mean, Tyson Miller has shown, as he did in the 10th inning today, that, you know, he's capable of getting big outs. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, if they fall back on matchups again. There was that brief stretch after Neris had a couple of rough outings, including a walk-off loss in Tampa, where they stayed away from him a little bit in those spots. But yeah, I mean, you know, Craig Counsell doesn't have a Devin Williams or a Josh Hader like he did in Milwaukee. And so with that, you know, you're going to have to ride, you know, some of the highs and lows that come with not necessarily having that lockdown guy that you can go to in the ninth.
PCA got the home run today, and that was his only hit before he was pinch hit for. Do you see him offensively? I mean, people are enamored with his speed. A guy can run, but the hope of him becoming a more well-rounded offensive player, I don't necessarily mean with power, though he can show it at times. What is your level of confidence that he does become a consistent offensive producer?
Yeah, I definitely think there's confidence in the sense that, you know, you just look at his relative experience. Like, he's still learning, you know, as a hitter, as a professional baseball player. Like Craig Counsell has mentioned before, like, you know, he's the same age as like his son. And so like that helps, I think, maybe keep some things in perspective that like this is a guy that's still learning, you know, what it takes, you know, to be ready every day preparation wise at the major league level, like, you know, getting the book on more pitchers as you face them, understanding how they might attack you and what you can do to set yourself up for success. And so like, it's still a learning process for him and it's going to take time. But I think even outside of just like the power he's shown for stretches, I mean, he doesn't need to be a guy that hits 300 to be successful offensively. I mean, they just need a little bit more consistency than he had showed earlier, and you're starting to see signs of that. It's really about understanding the strike zone, not expanding it, you know, staying consistent with his approach. And, you know, lately there's been starting to be some dividends to that. And yeah, I mean, his defense and base running is just so elite that if they can just get something close to league average from him, I mean, yeah, that's an incredibly valuable and productive player.
Justin Steele will pitch tomorrow at Wrigley Field, and his month of July, the numbers, the results were good. His first couple of starts in August have been really good, and he's sort of right now, I would say he's kind of what you would call a stopper. Does it even though they don't really need it at the moment, does it feel like, or does the team feel that way when he gets a start, that it's almost, at least lately, a win day for them?
Yeah, I mean, Craig Counsell's talked about it in the sense of, like, he's at this point of consistency in his career that he's not worried about what version of Justin Steele they're going to get on the mound. You know, they know pretty confidently he's probably going to go at least six innings. They're going to be, you know, in the game almost no matter what. And so there is something to that going into a game and knowing, you know, we're set up really well to win today just because of who we have in the mound. Like, very same feelings for, you know, when Shota Imanaga was going through his incredible stretch. And even now, I mean, he's still been, you know, pretty consistent. And so it does make a difference. And, you know, as an offense, you know, like, okay, this guy is going to post for us. We can, you know, I think there is something to that mentally, especially with a guy, you know, who's developed his track record at this point. So, yeah, I do think those things can make a difference, even if maybe it's not truly quantifiable. But, yeah, I mean, he's just been so consistent now that it's really been impressive what he's done over the past year and a half.
Megan, what's it like? What's it been like to cover the Cubs in 2024?
I mean, you see a lot of the same kind of games play out where offense struggles to score, really good pitching usually. I mean, I think that's been the most impressive thing is seeing the level of consistency they've really gotten since the start of the season from the rotation in particular, and just the way, you know, in the last 2+ months at this point, how the bullpen's really stabilized. I mean, that's been incredibly impressive. And so I think just with, like, you look at around the league and, you know, you see, especially when it comes to injuries and pitcher injuries, how many teams are affected by that. And the Cubs have as well, obviously, especially on the younger pitcher side. But the way they've been able to navigate that, I think, has been really impressive. And then on the flip side of that, you know, I think anybody would have to say, you know, disappointed in terms of what they thought the offense could be and what it has been. And so it's going to be really interesting to see over these last 6 weeks, can they find that gear that they had in April and that they showed for the final 3 months of last season? Because if not, you know, the front office has to seriously consider how they shake up, you know, the construction of the roster, the lineup, and the way they've put together this offensive group.
Megan Montemurro, the ball game tomorrow is at 1:20 at Wrigley Field. They will continue their series against the Blue Jays. As I mentioned, Justin Steele will get the start for the Cubs tomorrow. We appreciate you visiting with us tonight on a Friday night. Thank you for letting me take your time. And now you can go do fun things.
Thanks for having me on.
That is Megan Montemurro, and she is fantastic. You can follow her on Twitter at @M_Montemuro. So again, Cubs tomorrow, Wrigley Field, 1:20. That means we've got the pregame show at 12:45 right here on 670 The Score. And listen up, Chicago baseball fans, because Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo on Thursday, August 22nd from 4 until 5:30 p.m., an appearance with Ozzie Guillen and 670 The Score. Ozzie will be doing a meet and greet in the sportsbook area. He'll be mingling poolside. Be ready to talk baseball with Ozzie again, August 22nd from 4 until 5:30 at Four Winds Casino in New Buffalo. Man, I want to go. Dang it. How come I wasn't invited? Actually, you know what? Let me look at the calendar right now. Sean Sears, are you with me? Guess what?
What?
Guess what? I am back on that day, August 22nd. August 22nd from 6 until 9 p.m. It's a Thursday, so it's next week. Okay. So are you ready?
I'm ready.
Are you with me? Do you know?
I don't know.
You don't know.
I don't know. I never know.
Well, listen, Score listeners, put it in your phone, put it in your calendar, join me on Thursday. So, in fact, I'll tell you what, when you're on the way home from Four Winds Casino, because it ends at 5:30, you get in the car by 6 o'clock, I'll be starting up, and you can listen to me. Maybe we'll have Ozzie call in. I wonder, well, he might be toasty by then, though. That could be a bad time.
Even better then, right?
Remember when Don Cooper called the show and he was intoxicated?
I do remember that.
It was my first or second year. I think it was the first year with the White Sox, and they were playing really good baseball at the beginning of the year. They were good, and it looked like another playoff year. Obviously, it didn't happen. They ended up being a good team. They won 90 games, but you know the Twins and Tigers happen. So it was after a game. I was doing the post game show, and Coop had a few, and he called me. He was fun though. He said he was having some El Presidentes, which is a beer. So he called. He was fun. He talked a little bit of baseball with us, and we had a great time. And the next day, in the clubhouse, I remember seeing Mark Burley, and he said, "Did Coop call you drunk last night?" And I said, "Yes, he did. He drunk dialed, but it was great stuff." So listen. I want to hear from you. 312-644-6767 is the phone number that you can call and you can text. We have a few moments alone, you and me, before we get to our next guest at 740. We'll talk to Jeremy Rausch, who covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. And he was on Twitter and had some very positive things to say about Caleb Williams and the Bears. Also talking about his own team and some of the difficulties that Joe Burrow might have without Ja'Marr Chase. So I want you to hear from Jeremy. We're going to talk to him. But now it's time for you and me. Let's have some minutes together. What do you say? 312-644-6767. As I said earlier, I am on this Caleb Williams high, even though he's only thrown 7 passes in a game that doesn't count. I'm still there. I don't care. You can't talk me down from it. If you want to, you can try. You've got the phone number. Give it a shot. Chris Ronji on the Score.
We're back with host Chris Ronji on the Score.
As for the defense, and I'm guessing there's no Bears fans on here, I could not have been more impressed with how Caleb Williams looked. And you look at his receiving corps and you're reminded of who they could be this year with Roma Dunze, the rookie, Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. Keenan Allen and DJ Moore gave the Bengals DBs trouble all day long. It doesn't have to be an indictment on the Bengals defense or some kind of glowing statement about the Bears offense. It just, to me, looked like the Bears offense was better than the Bengals defense. In a lot of ways, now the Bengals defense wasn't able to slow them down with what they wanted to do. So, two big takeaways. Felt like the Bears won the day. Don't need to panic. Just some things that I think needed some context.
That is Jeremy Rausch, who covers the Cincinnati Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. And he is going to be joining the show in about 10 minutes. He had some really nice things to say about Caleb Williams, and I love to get an outsider's perspective on just about anything, either an outsider or somebody who is impartial, because if I get their opinion and it matches what I think as somebody who is impartial, I feel a lot better about the way I look at something, whether it's this, whether it's Caleb, whether it's the Bears, whether it's politics, whatever it is. I like to get that outsider perspective. So I'm really looking forward to talking to Jeremy Rausch in just a little bit on 670 The Score. I'm Chris Ranji filling in tonight. Very happy that you're with me. And I said that we could hear from you. I'd love to hear from you. 312-644-6767. Yeah, and, you know, we can have a night together, all of us. And what I also said before going to break is I've got this. I know I'm not alone. I know that many of you are with me on this Caleb Williams high after watching him play like a quarter, throwing, you know, seven passes in a preseason game, and how much more hyped I feel after just watching that. I know many of you have that along with me. I know that I'm being totally irrational in feeling like it's nearly automatic he's going to be good. I feel like at this point, I would be stunned if he's not good. And I'm making this assessment after watching that, after watching training camp, hearing the reports from training camp, seeing the few videos we get to see. It feels right. It looks right. It looks like it's going to translate when regular season games happen. So I'm on this high, and I'm not sure that you can talk me down from it. But if you'd like to, if you'd like to pour some water on this, go right ahead. Give it a shot. 312-644-6767 is the phone number where you can call and text. We can also talk a little bit of Cubs, too, because I have been complaining about the balk call from earlier today on Hector Neris, who blew the lead, but the Cubs won the game, so that's fine. It ended up being okay. And this text message says it wasn't even a difficult call. It was just a balk. It was definitely a balk. And look, yes, anytime umpires call a balk, unless it's Joe West against Mark Burley, it's always a balk by the rule book. But my problem with the call, whenever an umpire makes it, is that normally it's a call that could be made all the time, but they don't. They're very inconsistent with it. And then they'll call it 1 minute and you go, wait, hold on a second. He's been coming set like that the whole time. And now you're going to call it? Now you're going to call it on a strike three, which would be out number two in the ninth inning. Now you call it Alan Porter? Yeah, it was a balk. But why are you just now calling it? Jimenez walked back to the dugout striking out, or he thought he struck out and didn't complain. He didn't say, oh, that was a balk. Hey, didn't you see that? He didn't come set. No, he walked away. He thought the at-bat was over. Whatever. It doesn't matter now because they came back and they won it in 10 innings, and that's perfectly fine. So I just want to complain about something that doesn't matter. Is it okay? As lousy as everything is in the real world right now, is it okay if I complain about something that doesn't matter? Thank you very much. This text message from an 847, I love the Cubbies. Oh, Cubbies. But I feel they just don't have what it takes to make it postseason. I was upset when they brought in, I'm assuming is what they're supposed to say. I was upset when they brought in Council and giving Ross the boot. So did we pay for results? I feel Ross could have probably done the same. And that is from an 847. Well, I don't know, maybe. You know how I feel about managers. If you know me at all, if you've listened to any shows that I've ever done in the past, I don't put a ton of weight into who the manager is. I am more concerned with what the roster is. Yes, I think a manager can help on the margins. Yes, I think a manager can create a good environment where guys want to play, where guys feel comfortable playing, or when they feel just enough discomfort that gets them to grow as players, which I think is necessary sometimes too. A manager can do those things, but 98% of it is what the roster is. So what I would say is I'm not sure, and I have no problem with them bringing in Craig Counsell, because I do think that as managers go, he's as good as it gets. However, they really needed roster help during the offseason, and they opted not to go very hard. I think that they will do that during this offseason, but I also wonder how much the finish they will have here at the end of this year is going to influence that. If they have a pretty strong finish, will they say, hey, we got a good foundation here, let's really splurge in the offseason? If that happens, I'll feel pretty good about it. But we'll see. We'll see, right? It's more about the roster than anything else. You've got the phone number. I will get to your text messages. I will get to your phone calls. We're with you until 9 o'clock tonight. We will be talking to Herb Howard as we continue our Bears discussion in the 8 o'clock hour. A lot of things I want you to hear as well. But when we come back, Jeremy Rausch, who covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati, will join us on 670 The Score.
We're back with host Chris Ronji on The Score.
Their guys over there were raving about our defense. So I do think we have a really good defense. And you look at the guys that we got, I think it can be a really special crew this year from the guys that we got in the back end. And, you know, obviously when we added Montez in the middle of the year last year, what that did for our run game and obviously what he can do, you know, sack wise to get to the quarterback. So, you know, those guys are tough to go against every day, and they play really hard. And I feel like we're going against the best defense in the league every day we come out to practice. So that only benefits us.
Cole Kmet of the Bears, as we are getting ready for another preseason matchup. It'll be number 3 for the Bears tomorrow at noon at Soldier Field, the only Soldier Field preseason game that we're going to get this preseason. So it's good to talk with you tonight. I am Chris Ronji on Score Evenings, and we go back to the guest line tonight. It is brought to you by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome in from Fox 19 in Cincinnati, Jeremy Rau, who covers the Bengals, is with us now on The Score. Good evening, Jeremy. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Friday night.
Chris, pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to talk about the Bears right now and Caleb Williams and all the excitement that seems to be around him.
You know that it is Caleb world right now in Chicago. That's all anybody cares about is Caleb Williams. And when you were on Twitter and you posted your, I guess, recap of what you saw at Halas Hall, it got shared a lot, and it got shared by a lot of Bears fans who love hearing from somebody who doesn't have a rooting interest in the team and hearing them say some nice things about what's going on. So for people who did not hear what you had to say, what are your thoughts on what you saw at Halas Hall, in particular from Caleb Williams?
Well, first off, let me start with this. You know, thanks for having me on. I could not be more stunned about the reaction. I think in my 2-minute video, I said something to the tune of, I'm not sure Bears fans will see this. And the whole point of the recap from my point of view and covering the Bengals on the daily is not a lot of people were able to be at the practice from Cincinnati, just Cincinnati media in general. There was maybe 5 of us there. And so there was a lot of freak out around Bengals Twitter, Bengals social media, Bengals fans about how it was going, how it went, how it sounded like it went. And I felt like they just needed some context on how it actually went. But to recap briefly, my 2 big takeaways from practice were, number one, the Bears defense made Joe Burrow singular focused on T. Higgins. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. T. Higgins is a great wide receiver, but it exploited just how much Joe Burrow misses Ja'Marr Chase right now. And that's a credit to the Bears defense. I think they did a great job, and it reminded me a lot of when the Bengals went to Cleveland last year. Now, Joe Burrow was still dealing with his calf injury, but the Cleveland Browns shut down the Bengals and the pouring down rain. The Bengals offense could not do a single thing week one of last year, and it looked almost identical to that. And that's a credit to the Bears defense, if I'm saying they look anything like the Browns defense. So that's takeaway number one of how much they impressed me in those three interceptions on Joe Burrow. And number two was simply that Caleb Williams against a revamped Bengals defense looked ready. And understanding that this is a joint practice, but it's a lot like a preseason game to the starters. And Caleb Williams is facing a Bengals defense who has upgraded in so many ways this year. And yes, he did get touched a couple of times for a sack, as they call it, you know, in a joint practice. But I thought Caleb was very poised. He was aware of where the rush was coming. He was able to find DJ Moore and Keenan Allen several times and just hit it right in the pocket, right in the sweet spot, and find so many little windows against the Bengals defense that, to me, those two things are the most impressive. And I was stunned just to see how poised Caleb Williams was.
And Jeremy, you've been covering a team that had a rookie quarterback come in and have some pretty immediate success. So you know what it looks like. I know that we're only talking about some practice that you've seen, and it's not a ton. I mean, clearly there is game tape out there from college, and we have what happened last week, but what is it supposed to look like? What is it supposed to look like in training camp when you have a rookie quarterback who looks like he will do well immediately in the league?
To me, what it looks like is you see a quarterback who isn't trying to play a part. He's just being himself. He has that swagger, that walk about him. And I know this is not intangible football stuff, but it's the kind of thing that Joe Burrow had when he came in. Now, understand when Joe Burrow was drafted in 2020, it was the COVID training camp, which basically didn't exist. So it was a very different kind of feel and look for Joe Burrow. But you saw it from day one, a franchise like the Bengals, who needed someone to lift this organization from the ground and where it had been for several years and get back up on its feet and see if they could turn a corner to be something great again. And Joe Burrow, twice in 4 years, his two healthy years, has led the Bengals to a championship and to an AFC championship, at least the championship game. They haven't won yet, obviously, but it's one of those things where you can just see it from the start. And that, to me, is who Caleb Williams was when I saw him in person at the joint practice. Just the way he was bobbing his head to the music, the way he was walking around, how he was carrying himself. None of it seemed like he was trying to play a part or look a certain way. It was just him being himself. And being that, it was good enough against a Bengals defense that I think is going to be a lot better than last year's defense. So I think all those things, the way you see him carrying himself, not only was surprising to me because I didn't know what I would expect to see from Caleb Williams after watching him in college, I was surprised by how he carried himself and also surprised by just how well he executed the offense.
Talking with Jeremy Rau, who covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. And there's been a little bit of drama that's going on, and contract issues are not unusual during training camp for star players. And right now, Ja'Marr Chase is going through that with the Bengals, and he's missing some valuable training camp time. How is that going over? Because I know that people generally are more accepting nowadays of their players holding out to get a contract done or whatever than they used to be. But how is it going over right now with Ja'Marr Chase out of camp?
The most important thing is, and this is kind of a weird clarifier, it's the most important thing is that there's no toxicity between Ja'Marr Chase and the organization, or really Ja'Marr Chase and the fans, because he's doing more of a hold-in, which is kind of a new 2024 term for the NFL, right? But the hold-in basically means that Ja'Marr is present at practice for the most part. He's there, obviously not dressed, but just there on the sidelines. He is a part of meetings. He shows up when the team shows up, goes home when they go home. He is very engaged and very involved, and Zach Taylor, the Bengals head coach, has been very transparent about all of that throughout this process. At the beginning, there was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing about what Ja'Marr was doing. We all knew exactly what was happening, and I think Zach finally gave up on trying to spin another narrative on that. But the most important thing is it hasn't been toxic. Ja'Marr has been around. He's in the building there's good communication and all those things are happening. I think everyone understands what's happening here. Jamar is holding in trying to get that contract extension. Here's the thing, though. He's under contract this year and next year with the Bengals. And so the Bengals don't have to do anything. And historically, in this kind of a situation, they haven't done anything. So I don't expect Jamar and the Bengals to get a deal done before the season, but I do expect Jamar Chase, once we get past the final preseason game, those final 2 weeks leading up to the season kickoff, I do expect Jamar to practice and for this to play out okay. But, you know, there's a little unrest right now, but I think people understand what's happening here.
What's the level of concern with him missing all the reps? I know some guys are just good enough they can slide right back in with not as much practice as everybody else. Is there concern, though, that it might take him some time to ramp up if this goes on much longer?
Yeah, I mean, I specifically asked Joe Burrow that very question because Joe and Jamar go way back to college. They're best buds. They know each other so well. I just wanted to ask, understanding that there is a new offensive coordinator in Cincinnati and Dan Pitcher, understanding that he has some new wrinkles and just everything that it takes to make sure everyone's on the same page, I said, how much time do you need with Jamar to make sure you guys are ready for the season? And he said, basically, a couple of drills. One individual drill, maybe one team drill. He basically kind of shrugged it off as nothing. Now, it's more than that. I understand where Joe Burrow is coming from. But his point is that they can get back on the same page lightning quick. And I do expect that they can in those final 2 weeks if that's how it plays out. But the problem in Cincinnati, and I know I'm talking to Bears fans right now, but the problem in Cincinnati is the last 2 years they have had those slow 0-2 starts. Now, a couple of years ago, they got out of that hole, still made the AFC Championship. Last year, Joe Burrow got injured. They've proven they can get out of that hole, but that is the major concern around Cincinnati, is that they can't start slow again. And it feels like with Jamar Chase not practicing, it lends itself to possibly, even if it's the first half against the Patriots week one, it lends itself to looking a little rusty in that opener.
Jeremy Rau covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. We've talked about Burrow here, who is a really fun player to watch. From the outside, it looks like he is a fun player to cover. What is it like to deal with Joe Burrow?
Honestly, it's this is going to sound crazy to you, but it's like you're covering the Beatles every single day in Cincinnati. I mean, it's it has changed my life top to bottom. You can ask my wife, my 9 and 7 year old. You can ask anyone who knows me about how different my life has been post 2020. It really is. My life is AB after Burrow. Everything has been different since he came to Cincinnati and the way that we cover the team. And if Caleb Williams is that kind of a player for the Bears, it'll be the same thing for how people cover the Bears. But just to answer your question, Joe Burrow is a lot of fun. He picks his spots when he wants to be fun or kind of coy. The way that he interacts with the media, he started to open up a lot more to the media this year. He's doing a lot more national one-on-ones and things like that going on with Kay Adams. He hasn't done that in the past, and he doesn't do local media and Cincinnati one-on-one interviews, but he is entertaining. One of the most fun parts about covering Joe Burrow, I tell this to a lot of people, is you never know when you're going to have a moment that becomes one of those viral moments where it's just a small interaction or something small that Joe Burrow says, and everyone reacts to it in a completely different way than you ever expected they would, and it becomes a thing. And that, to me, has been kind of part of just understanding what it's like covering a superstar quarterback. And I know Bears fans can resonate with that in some ways. But if Caleb is that way, it becomes a very unique thing on the daily when you're covering a quarterback like that. I think, and as they become more and more comfortable, like Joe Burrow has, you see more and more of that personality, and it really does become a joy to cover that kind of a quarterback.
It's interesting you say that, because I would have figured that he does media any chance he gets. I wasn't expecting you to say that he kind of picks his spots.
That's the interesting thing. You know, when I saw him, I watched from afar when he won the title at LSU. I thought he just seemed like such a fun and funny and kind of lighthearted guy. Joe Burrow actually is a very introverted kind of person. He doesn't know what to do with all the attention. He doesn't love all of the attention. And so in some ways, he does try to manage how much of that attention is kind of pulled towards him with the exclusive interviews, the one-on-ones, all those kind of things. But when you talk to Joe Burrow, if you go up to him in the locker room and you want to talk about, let's just say, a restaurant in Cincinnati, where do you like to go? Where do you like to eat? Joe will sit there and talk to you for several minutes, no big deal, off the cuff. He loves that kind of stuff. He feels a little more awkward at a press conference setting, in a one-on-one setting. It's just not in his nature to be that kind of a guy. But to my point, he's grown into that limelight. He's learned how to kind of take that on and still has found ways to be entertaining in those spots. It's just not naturally his best spot, I'll put it that way.
And as you mentioned, he missed 7 games last year, a huge reason why the Bengals ended up 9-8 as we let you go. Baltimore, I think from the outside, we would all consider that to still be the best team in the division. Could you make an argument that it is the Bengals division this year?
The only argument I could make that would be logical, and it would be a bit of a homer argument because I work in Cincinnati, but it's the fact that Joe Burrow, as I mentioned earlier, has been healthy twice in 4 seasons. And those 2 seasons, they won back-to-back division titles. I think we've seen what the ceiling is for this team with Joe Burrow, and that's a team who can contend for a Super Bowl and possibly win one. It's a team who can win division titles when Joe Burrow is healthy with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And all of that can still be a thing this year for the Bengals. There's no reason that it won't be. And also I'll throw in the idea that the Ravens have had a lot of staffing changes. I'm curious to see how that plays out. Also, could it be the super version of the Ravens when you add in Derrick Henry? Could it be Lamar MVP again? Could it be that team once again, and do they run it back? Yes, that's very possible. But I think the fact that the Bengals have found the blueprint to winning this division when Joe Burrow is good, I think that's the reason I believe that the Bengals can do it this year, coming off of Joe Burrow's injury last season.
Jeremy Rau covering the Bengals for Fox 19. They will play at Soldier Field tomorrow against the Bears. Appreciate your time on a Friday night. Thank you for talking with us.
Anytime. Love to talk. Talk again anytime you got me.
That is Jeremy Rau again covering the Bengals from Cincinnati, or for Cincinnati. That AFC North is a really interesting quarterback division, isn't it? With Baltimore, with Lamar Jackson there, with Burrow, as we're talking about. And what's going on in Pittsburgh is super fascinating with, well, obviously, Justin Fields, who right now is getting the reps with Russ Wilson out. That'll be really interesting to see what ends up happening there. Fascinating division the AFC North is. We've got another hour of the show coming up. We want to hear from you. I'm Chris Ranji. Did you know that? 312-644-6767 is our number. Your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets. You can tweet at me at Chris Ranji. Would love to hear from you on The Score.
We're back with host Chris Ranji on The Score.
Their guys over there were raving about our defense. So I do think we have a really good defense. And you look at the guys that we got, I think it can be a really special crew this year from the guys that we got in the back end. And, you know, obviously when we added Montez in the middle of the year last year, what that did for our run game and obviously what he can do, you know, sack wise to get to the quarterback. So, you know, those guys are tough to go against every day, and they play really hard. And I feel like we're going against the best defense in the league every day we come out to practice. So that only benefits us.
Cole Kmet of the Bears. As we are getting ready for another preseason matchup, it'll be number 3 for the Bears tomorrow at noon at Soldier Field, the only Soldier Field preseason game that we're going to get this preseason. So it's good to talk with you tonight. I am Chris Ranji on Score Evenings, and we go back to the guest line tonight. It is brought to you by Circa Resorts and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. We welcome in, from Fox 19 in Cincinnati, Jeremy Rau, who covers the Bengals, is with us now on The Score. Good evening, Jeremy. Thanks for hanging out with us on a Friday night.
Chris, pleasure to be with you. Pleasure to talk about the Bears right now and Caleb Williams and all the excitement that seems to be around him.
You know that it is Caleb world right now in Chicago. That's all anybody cares about, is Caleb Williams. And when you were on Twitter and you posted your, I guess, recap of what you saw at Hallis Hall, it got shared a lot. and it got shared by a lot of Bears fans who love hearing from somebody who doesn't have a rooting interest in the team and hearing them say some nice things about what's going on. So for people who did not hear what you had to say, what are your thoughts on what you saw at Halas Hall, in particular from Caleb Williams?
Well, first off, let me start with this. You know, thanks for having me on. I could not be more stunned about the reaction. I think in my two-minute video, I said something to the tune of, I'm not sure Bears fans will see this. And the whole point of the recap from my point of view and covering the Bengals on the daily is not a lot of people were able to be at the practice from Cincinnati, just Cincinnati media in general. There was maybe five of us there. And so there was a lot of freakouts around Bengals Twitter, Bengals social media, Bengals fans about how it was going, how it went, how it sounded like it went. And I felt like they just needed some context on how it actually went. But to recap briefly, my two big takeaways from practice were, number one, the Bears defense made Joe Burrow singular focused on T. Higgins. Now, that's not necessarily a bad thing. T. Higgins is a great wide receiver, but it exploited just how much Joe Burrow misses Ja'Marr Chase right now. And that's a credit to the Bears defense. I think they did a great job. And it reminded me a lot of when the Bengals went to Cleveland last year. Now, Joe Burrow was still dealing with his calf injury, but the Cleveland Browns shut down the Bengals and the pouring down rain. Bengals offense could not do a single thing week one of last year. And it looked almost identical to that. And that's a credit to the Bears defense, if I'm saying they look anything like the Browns defense. So that's takeaway number one of how much they impressed me in those three interceptions on Joe Burrow. And number two was simply that Caleb Williams against a revamped Bengals defense looked ready. And understanding that this is a joint practice, but it's a lot like a preseason game to the starters. And Caleb Williams is facing a Bengals defense who was upgraded in so many ways this year. And yes, he did get touched a couple of times for a sack, as they call it, you know, in a joint practice. But I thought Caleb was very poised. He was aware of where the rush was coming. He was able to find DJ Moore and Keenan Allen several times and just hit it right in the pocket, right in the sweet spot, and find so many little windows against the Bengals defense that, to me, those two things are the most impressive. And I was stunned just to see how poised Caleb Williams was.
And Jeremy, you've been covering a team that had a rookie quarterback come in and have some pretty immediate success. So you know what it looks like. I know that we're only talking about some practice that you've seen, and it's not a ton. I mean, clearly there is game tape out there from college, and we have what happened last week, but what is it supposed to look like? What is it supposed to look like in training camp when you have a rookie quarterback who looks like he will do well immediately in the league?
To me, what it looks like is you see a quarterback who isn't trying to play a part. He's just being himself. He has that swagger, that walk about him. And I know this is not intangible football stuff, but it's the kind of thing that Joe Burrow had when he came in. Now, understand, when Joe Burrow was drafted in 2020, it was the COVID training camp, which basically didn't exist. So it was a very different kind of feel and look for Joe Burrow. But you saw it from day one. A franchise like the Bengals, who needed someone to lift this organization from the ground and where it had been for several years and get back up on its feet and see if they could turn a corner to be something great again. And Joe Burrow, twice in 4 years, his two healthy years, has led the Bengals to a championship and to an AFC championship, at least the championship game. They haven't won yet, obviously, but it's one of those things where you can just see it from the start. And that, to me, is who Caleb Williams was when I saw him in person at the joint practice. Just the way he was bobbing his head to the music, the way he was walking around, how he was carrying himself. None of it seemed like he was trying to play a part or look a certain way. It was just him being himself. And being that, it was good enough against a Bengals defense that I think is going to be a lot better than last year's defense. So I think all those things, the way you see him carrying himself, not only was surprising to me because I didn't know what I would expect to see from Caleb Williams after watching him in college, I was surprised by how he carried himself and also surprised by just how well he executed the offense.
Talking with Jeremy Rao, who covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. And there's been a little bit of drama that's going on, and contract issues are not unusual during training camp for star players. And right now, Ja'Marr Chase is going through that with the Bengals, and he's missing some valuable training camp time. How is that going over? Because I know that people generally are more accepting nowadays of their players holding out to get a contract done or whatever than they used to be. But how is it going over right now with Ja'Marr Chase out of camp?
The most important thing is, and this is kind of a weird clarifier, it's the most important thing is that there's no toxicity between Ja'Marr Chase and the organization, or really Ja'Marr Chase and the fans, because he's doing more of a hold-in, which is kind of a new 2024 term for the NFL, right? But the hold-in basically means that Ja'Marr is present at practice for the most part. He's there, obviously not dressed, but just there on the sidelines. He is a part of meetings. He shows up when the team shows up, goes home when they go home. He is very engaged and very involved. And Zach Taylor, the Bengals head coach, has been very transparent about all of that throughout this process. At the beginning, there was kind of a tongue-in-cheek thing about what Ja'Marr was doing. We all knew exactly what was happening. And I think Zach finally gave up on trying to spin another narrative on that. But the most important thing is it hasn't been toxic. Ja'Marr has been around. He's in the building. There's good communication and all those things are happening. I think everyone understands what's happening here. Ja'Marr is holding in trying to get that contract extension. Here's the thing, though. He is under contract this year and next year with the Bengals. And so the Bengals don't have to do anything. And historically, in this kind of a situation, they haven't done anything. So I don't expect Ja'Marr and the Bengals to get a deal done before the season, but I do expect Ja'Marr Chase, once we get past the final preseason game, those final 2 weeks leading up to the season kickoff, I do expect Ja'Marr to practice and for this to play out okay. But, you know, there's a little unrest right now, but I think people understand what's happening here.
What's the level of concern with him missing all the reps? I know some guys are just good enough they can slide right back in with not as much practice as everybody else. Is there concern, though, that it might take him some time to ramp up if this goes on much longer?
Yeah, I mean, I specifically asked Joe Burrow that very question because Joe and Ja'Marr go way back to college. They're best buds. They know each other so well. I just wanted to ask, understanding that there is a new offensive coordinator in Cincinnati and Dan Pitcher, understanding that he has some new wrinkles and just everything that it takes to make sure everyone's on the same page, I said, how much time do you need with Ja'Marr to make sure you guys are ready for the season? And he said, basically, a couple of drills. One individual drill, maybe one team drill. He basically kind of shrugged it off as nothing. Now, it's more than that. I understand where Joe Burrow is coming from. But his point is that they can get back on the same page lightning quick. And I do expect that they can in those final 2 weeks if that's how it plays out. But the problem in Cincinnati, and I know I'm talking to Bears fans right now, but the problem in Cincinnati is the last 2 years they have had those slow 0-2 starts. Now, a couple of years ago, they got out of that hole, still made the AFC Championship. Last year, Joe Burrow got injured. They've proven they can get out of that hole, but that is the major concern around Cincinnati is that they can't start slow again. And it feels like with Ja'Marr Chase not practicing, it lends itself to possibly, even if it's the first half against the Patriots week one, it lends itself to looking a little rusty in that opener.
Jeremy Rau covers the Bengals for Fox 19 in Cincinnati. We've talked about Burrow here, who is a really fun player to watch. From the outside, it looks like he is a fun player to cover. What is it like to deal with Joe Burrow?
Honestly, it's this is going to sound crazy to you, but it's like you're covering the Beatles every single day in Cincinnati. I mean, it has changed my life top to bottom. You can ask my wife, my 9 and 7 year old. You can ask anyone who knows me about how different my life has been post 2020. It really is. My life is AB after Burrow. Everything has been different since he came to Cincinnati and the way that we cover the team. And if Caleb Williams is that kind of a player for the Bears, it'll be the same thing for how people cover the Bears. But just to answer your question, Joe Burrow is a lot of fun. He picks his spots when he wants to be fun or kind of coy, the way that he interacts with the media. He started to open up a lot more to the media this year. He's doing a lot more national one-on-ones and things like that going on with Kay Adams. He hasn't done that in the past, and he doesn't do local media in Cincinnati one-on-one interviews. But He is entertaining. One of the most fun parts about covering Joe Burrow, I tell this to a lot of people, is you never know when you're going to have a moment that becomes one of those viral moments where it's just a small interaction or something small that Joe Burrow says, and everyone reacts to it in a completely different way than you ever expected they would, and it becomes a thing. And that, to me, has been kind of part of just understanding what it's like covering a superstar quarterback. And I know Bears fans can resonate with that in some ways. But if Caleb is that way, it becomes a very unique thing on the daily when you're covering a quarterback like that. I think, and as they become more and more comfortable, like Joe Burrow has, you see more and more of that personality, and it really does become a joy to cover that kind of a quarterback.
It's interesting you say that, because I would have figured that he does media any chance he gets. I wasn't expecting you to say that he kind of picks his spots.
That's the interesting thing. You know, when I saw him, I watched from afar when he won the title at LSU. I thought he just seemed like such a fun and funny and kind of lighthearted guy. Joe Burrow actually is a very introverted kind of person. He doesn't know what to do with all the attention. He doesn't love all of the attention. And so in some ways, he does try to manage how much of that attention is kind of pulled towards him with the exclusive interviews, the one-on-ones, all those kind of things. But when you talk to Joe Burrow, if you go up to him in the locker room and you want to talk about, let's just say, a restaurant in Cincinnati, where do you like to go? Where do you like to eat? Joe will sit there and talk to you for several minutes, no big deal, off the cuff. He loves that kind of stuff. He feels a little more awkward at a press conference setting and a one-on-one setting. It's just not in his nature to be that kind of a guy. But to my point, he's grown into that limelight. He's learned how to kind of take that on and still has found ways to be entertaining in those spots. It's just not naturally his best spot. I'll put it that way.
And as you mentioned, he missed 7 games last year, a huge reason why the Bengals ended up 9-8 as we let you go. Baltimore, I think from the outside, we would all consider that to still be the best team in the division. Could you make an argument that it is the Bengals division this year?
The only argument I could make that would be logical, and it would be a bit of a homer argument because I work in Cincinnati, but it's the fact that Joe Burrow, as I mentioned earlier, has been healthy twice in 4 seasons. And those 2 seasons, they won back-to-back division titles. I think we've seen what the ceiling is for this team with Joe Burrow, and that's a team who can contend for a Super Bowl and possibly win one. It's a team who can win division titles when Joe Burrow is healthy with Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins. And all of that can still be a thing this year for the Bengals. There's no reason that it won't be. And also, I'll throw in the idea that the Ravens have had a lot of staffing changes. I'm curious to see how that plays out. Also, could it be the super version of the Ravens when you add in Derrick Henry? Could it be Lamar MVP again? Could it be that team once again, and do they run it back? Yes, that's very possible. But I think the fact that the Bengals have found the blueprint to winning this division when Joe Burrow is good, I think that's the reason I believe that the Bengals can do it this year, coming off of Joe Burrow's injury last season.
Jeremy Rau covering the Bengals for Fox 19. They will play at Soldier Field tomorrow against the Bears. Appreciate your time on a Friday night. Thank you for talking with us.
Anytime. Love to talk. Talk again anytime you got me.
That is Jeremy Rau again covering the Bengals from Cincinnati, or for Cincinnati. That AFC North is a really interesting quarterback division, isn't it? With Baltimore, with Lamar Jackson there, with Burrow, as we're talking about. And what's going on in Pittsburgh is super fascinating with, well, obviously, Justin Fields, who right now is getting the reps with Russ Wilson out. That'll be really interesting to see what ends up happening there. Fascinating division the AFC North is. We've got another hour of the show coming up. We want to hear from you. I'm Chris Ranji. Did you know that? 312-644-6767 is our number. Your phone calls, your text messages, your tweets. You can tweet at me at Chris Ranji. Would love to hear from you on The Score.